A couch potato warning is in effect as DirecTV transforms Thanksgiving into Streamsgiving. DirecTV's got free TV nationwide. With a heavy front of 60-plus live channels and a steady stream of streaming apps, conditions are perfect for nonstop entertainment. So hunker down on the couch and sign up for your free trial of My Entertainment from DirecTV. I'm going to watch some free TV.
Start streaming My Entertainment from DirecTV now at streamsgiving.com. My free is free. Paid services. 5-day free trial, then auto-renews monthly. Cancel anytime. Temporary credit hold may apply. Restrictions apply. See streamsgiving.com for details. AI produced.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hey, what is up, everybody?
And welcome back
to
everyone.
Mile Higher.
Yeah, to Mile Higher Podcast, episode 371. We were off last week, right? If I understand our schedule correctly.
Yes. Back from
That's a lie.
No.
You were not.
We were not off.
Oh.
In real life, you were.
In real life, we were. We are now back in the country. We were in Paris. I much preferred it out of the country, I must say.
Beautiful place, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Stunning.
Well, today we have a topic that ain't so beautiful. Talking about someone specifically who is quite ugly in all ways, in my opinion.
Wow. Okay.
As we were saying, he kind of looks like an ugly Bradley Cooper, Kroger brand Brad, you could say. We'll see if people agree with us.
With a smidge of Cody Brown.
Yeah. A smidge of Cody Sister Brown Wives. Town for sure. Yeah. Now, his personality is what truly makes him ugly.
But today we're going to go all the way back to the very beginning and look at the rise and fall of James Arthur Ray, starting out with two people who become very important to the story later on, Beverly Bunn and Kirby Brown. And their introduction to James Arthur Ray was similar to that of many others. They discovered the self-help guru through The Secret, of course, as we just mentioned, and subsequent appearances on Oprah, which obviously being on Oprah's show is huge. Mm-hmm. It's going to get you access to a huge audience. And that really helped spike interest in his self-help career.
He was on there quite a bit.
And really got things going for him. And James really became popular because he started, you know, he was looking at the self-help industry. He's like, how can I kind of carve my own path here? And he kind of figured out that by combining different elements of other self-help gurus, you know, spiritual, financial, business, relationships,
the classic,
kind of, and new age spiritualism, kind of putting it all together into one, including, you know, the law of attraction in there, of course, that this would kind of create what he thought a relatable sort of philosophy that people would resonate with. Beverly said, I knew I had some shortcomings in different areas of my life, and I thought I needed something new to give me a new perspective or put me on a different path. And in May of 2009, she and Kirby separately attended a Harmonic Wealth Weekend run by James after they read his book, Harmonic Wealth, The Secret of Attracting the Life You Want.
Now, this event, which cost $1,300 a person, included a weekend of seminars and activities in which James showcased his now branded self-help version of things. Confrontational sessions blended with spirituality, a little mix. Beverly and Kirby finally met at the end of the weekend when they saw one another while signing up for another event, Spiritual Warrior. Now, this event is much more intensive than the Harmonic Wealth Weekend. During Spiritual Warrior, guests completed a 5-day training with James himself, meant to be the pinnacle of his spiritual and self-help teachings. And of course, as it was the fullest extent of James's teachings, it was also the most expensive, with guests paying $9,700 per person for the opportunity to be enlightened by James. Do you think this price tag is worth it for 5 days with James?
I mean, this is kind of typical in the self-help industry, though, or really anybody. I mean, there's plenty of people that we've come across in our time doing the show who do these kind of in-person, more intimate gatherings and retreats, and they're always so expensive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, this is more than $1,000 a day.
Spend like $10,000 and then go sit in the desert with us.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's never like...
You get treated like shit.
Yeah. Sleep in a tent or on the ground. It's never like, let's go do an overwater bungalow in Tahiti.
But they're stripping you down to your soul.
Yeah.
It's getting you to reconnect with who you are and find yourself, you know?
Which I always wonder what the profit margin is on this.
Oh, I do.
Out of the $9,700, how much is actually going? I'm sure a lot of it does go to the retreat, paying for the costs and all that. But there's got to be like, I bet you it's like 50% profit. 50% goes to James.
At least, yeah.
At the end of the day.
But little did Vanessa or Kirby know that by the end of Spiritual Warrior, three of their friends would be dead. And their teacher, James himself, would be on the run. But before we get into that, we have to look into James's personal life, his teachings, and what compelled people to pay thousands of dollars just to hear him speak.
James, like many spiritual teachers or gurus out there, they always seem to have this illustrious, wild upbringing with lots of traumatic events and lots of just life-changing moments that kind of fits so very well into their overall story of how they've overcome things.
And when it's someone who actually has gone through those things too, it does add, whether that's an author or a self-help, whatever it may be, it makes someone's story a lot more, you know, powerful.
Intriguing. Yeah. And just, you're like, well, they've actually been through it, so they probably know better than I do, or I can relate with them because we've gone through something similar.
Mm-hmm. And events like that, I think, do really shape someone.
Which is, I have no issues with that. It's when they lie about it.
Yeah. That's
where I draw the line. When you start lying about events that you went through in your past just to create an interesting story for yourself, there's an issue there. I mean, you're setting yourself up for failure, if you ask me. But
well, he knew that was the part of the recipe that he was missing.
Yeah. Well, so James, he was born on November 22nd, 1957 in Honolulu, Hawaii, because his father was stationed there while in the Navy. And during their time in Hawaii, they weren't there for very long, but they ultimately ended up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is where really he grew up and spent a lot of his life. And he's an Okie boy. And his father, Gordon, became a pastor at the Red Fork Church. James described his father as domineering and a real hellfire and brimstone preacher. This dynamic really followed James even into his adulthood. And I think when we start listening to him and watching him, I know for me, he gives off that preacher vibe. Like I almost am like, damn, I'm watching one of my old pastors on stage.
He has that energy about him.
Totally. And just his delivery and the way he tells stories and stuff. Like he ends up telling a story about like his first day of kindergarten. I'm like, this is exactly how a pastor would have set up a personal story back in at church.
Or the story where he talked about being a young boy and jumping out of bed. And he actually kind of like physically jumps. It's just so charismatic. Charming.
But James's father, Gordon, had wanted his firstborn son to continue the family business, and he was disappointed when James showed no interest from an early age. Gordon would even say that he had more fun with James's younger brother, John, while James always preferred his mother, Joyce. In fact, while James described his father as intense and domineering, he said that his mother was the most loving, beautiful, angelic person I've ever known, and she has to be to live with Dad.
He actually said that during a seminar when his parents were there.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of probably, it was a joke.
Yeah,
then,
it was a joke, but I think there was some real.
But they were still a staunch religious household, and everything was a sin. Movies were a sin. Pinball was just gambling, and therefore a sin. James and his brother felt like they were kept away from the world, so kind of sheltered, which I kind of relate to in some ways. Additionally, James was already very reserved and a shy boy. He was a goofy looking kid, which that's a quote according to his brother.
Oh, they were ripping on him.
They were. Mm-hmm.
In the Enlightened documentary. They were like, I mean, our brother was ugly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was kind of mean.
They're like showing pictures of him.
Yeah. It's kind of fucked him up being ugly. It's basically what they were saying.
Well, James always told a story about when he was a young boy, he was excited to start kindergarten. However, when he got to school, he realized, quote, I was different. And it seems like he may have experienced kind of feeling left out, not really a part of, you know, the normal crew. I don't know exactly what he means by that per se, but it seems like he's always kind of felt like he's a little bit different than everybody. But here's the first discrepancy with James's early life. He claimed that his childhood was riddled with poverty and hardship and stated that even though his father worked very hard, the family couldn't afford clothes or haircuts. He even went on to emphasize that his family's lack of wealth led him to question God when his father couldn't afford his Cub Scout uniform. And where is the proof of this, aside from his books and lectures? Well, there's really none. But according to one of his fellow classmates, Ray always dressed well and knew he'd make something of himself. Which this doesn't exactly point to, you know, the supposed past of being, you know, reserved, poor, quiet kid. Although it doesn't really solve the looking funny part. But what about James's life after high school? Well, this is also pretty unclear because according to his website, between the time James moved out of his parents' house and became famous, he lived 10 lives compressed into one. Which I don't know if he means that quite literally, like he literally experienced 10 lives, or he just felt like he had a lot of growth and went through a lot of different life events during that period of his life. So he stated that he climbed to the Salcante in Peru, trekked through the darkest depths of the Amazon, spent 2 weeks in the Sinai Peninsula with the Bedouin tribes, and even spent the night in caves where Moses received the 10 commandments. Of course, all of these sound amazing, right? Like that's a lot. That's traveling around the world, going to all of these very, very important places. James said, I've pushed through repeated dark valleys. I've moved and climbed mountains and endured multiple spiritual and emotional rebirths and renewals. Impressive, right? If it's true, I mean, that's quite the journey.
I mean, he sounds a bit like Jesus himself. I mean, he's definitely trying to sound like Moses, being like, yeah. I went to the cave he was at.
And then
the
also...
version.
Well, and he also is like insinuating he went and kind of put himself into different cultural sort of destinations and different religious groups and was like, I'm well-cultured, basically. I'm a world traveler. I'm well-cultured. I've experienced other religions, other spiritual practices.
I'm enlightened, if you will.
Yeah, like I'm on that path of Jesus.
Hell yeah.
But is it true?
Now, while we can't directly refute these experiences, we can confirm what James was actually getting up to in his early life. While his website stated that James had collegiate learning, in reality, he dropped out of Tulsa Junior College in 1978, though he did earn an associate's degree. He claimed to work for the self-help teacher, Stephen Covey, but actually, he had only taught courses offered by Stephen's company. And Fortune magazine discovered that he had never actually worked for the company. He also explained that he became a workoutaholic before buying a motorcycle and very promptly wrecking it, creating injuries so severe that James could no longer lift for several years. Then at the age of 26, James got married. This first marriage was the one, quote, done out of guilt and shame because he had just had sex for the first time. And he was convinced he was going to go to hell if he didn't legalize his dastardly deed. Not the strongest foundation for a happy marriage. His wife filed divorce papers 2 years after the marriage, around the time that the bank was foreclosing on James's first house. So was this the moment James started becoming a public speaker or traveling the world searching for a new meaning in life? No. Instead, James got a job at AT&T working as a telemarketer. Of course, even this mundane job was a source of James's trademarked, exaggerated past. He said that he did extremely well and was promoted to a managerial position early on. Of course, he said that the success didn't come from following the manual. You know, he was breaking barriers. According to him, it actually came from giving his team rock star style speeches at the beginning of each day while playing Welcome to the Jungle.
This reminds me of Wolf on Wall Street.
Very much Wolf on Wall Street.
Of like the pump up speeches and stuff and everybody just going crazy. And again, it sounds too fantastical. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like really at AT&T, they were doing it.
You don't believe it?
Maybe.
I think it seems Jamesy.
I don't know.
I think it's what gave him a taste and got him inspired to become, like, he felt an ounce of power of, like, ooh, I'm moving these people. I don't know. I believe it really happened. Do you guys believe it really happened?
I don't know. I could see it. The reason I could see it is thinking about it from, like, the employee's perspective, being like, oh, James is playing Welcome to the Jungle again. Yeah, here we go. That's where I kind of see it. It being this actual rock star style, like, people are loving me.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I don't know if I'd go that far.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, was it? I think in his head it was that, though.
Right.
If he actually did it, did people receive it that way? Fuck no, I don't think so. But I think he actually did it. I think it's very specific, the song and everything. I don't know. That's a lie I believe of James. So he then said he could conquer the world with his newfound ability to influence people. He claimed to have founded the Quantum Consulting Group, although there is no proof that this group did anything at this time. He then stated that he taught time management and team building exercises with Stephen Covey, which again has no record of him ever even entering the offices. However, after tirelessly working at AT&T while forcing his staff to listen to Guns N' Roses, James would retire home and began reading mystical books, though he never mentioned what those early influences were. It was here that James realized that while numerous other self-help gurus had cornered different markets, there hadn't been one yet to combine New Age mysticism with psychology and classic self-help seminars. So, James began keynote speaking. First, he spoke in small rooms for company retreats, or as one of many in hotel banquet halls. He said that it was hit and miss and spent most of his free time telling a story to his couch.
Loser!
Finally, he decided to move where the rest of the industry was. California, baby. He bought a house there. And again, it's kind of unclear what he was doing for work at this time because his talks weren't exactly pulling in the numbers that he needed. And he had quit his regular job with AT&T at this point. But the real turning point for James wasn't the time spent in the desert with the Bedouin tribes or the pizza parties at the marketing office. No, it all came when he saw the man himself, Tony Robbins, at a seminar in Los Angeles. Now, James, who always saw himself as more than just a self-help guy, said, holy shit, it was like a rock concert. I think in that moment, he was like, I need to be Tony. I am going to be Tony. And it wasn't just the ability to help people. It was most likely the fact that he could make a ton of money while doing it.
You know what product we love and we're so happy that they're finally sponsoring our show? Aura Frames.
You just love that I do all the work of setting up.
You do. You set it up. I have a beautiful Aura Frame in my office that Kendall gifted me.
Mm-hmm.
And then she loaded it up with all these beautiful family pictures, my daughter's on there, memories, and I just get to look at it all day and it makes me so happy.
So I live by the Aura Frame. I love my Aura Frames and managing them. I have a big one at our house, one at the office. I have three small ones at home. I just got another one just for home video. I have one in my bathroom. I'm going to put one in my daughter's room. And then pretty much everyone in our family has been gifted one. If you look, those are all of the frames that I manage. And I love my Aura time. If you are looking for the perfect holiday gift,
yes,
get anyone in your family, get them an Aura frame. You will not be disappointed, and they certainly will not be either.
Great for grandparents.
Great for grandparents, especially if you have a parent that lives in another state and doesn't get to see your kids or get to see you. Send them the pictures. They love it.
Yeah, you just load it through the app, right? It's from your photos on your phone.
I even send Janelle's mom pictures of my daughter in the app. And she, every time I send her anything, she always texts me and like, I love the new pictures. And it's just, it's the best, you guys.
No,
it's
everybody raves technology. About it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's such a cool concept.
And they're beautiful. There's so many different color options and sizes now. There's a new one that kind of looks more like an actual photo that's printed. I really want that one. I'm eyeing it. And what's nice is people can even download the photos that you put on the app right to their device from the Aura app.
That's
so you don't have to send it. It's just a great photo sharing app. Unlimited free photos and videos. You just download the Aura app and connect to Wi-Fi. And they have unlimited space, I believe. I mean, I have thousands on ours.
That's really cool. Yeah, it's all cloud-based, so so genius, man.
Mm-hmm. And you can even preload the photos before you gift it to someone, before you ship it off, or before you hand it to them, so that when they plug it in...
It's all there. There's no setup.
You can even pick the default one that shows up first. You can personalize the gift, put a message on it before it arrives. And yeah, it's easy to share all your photos and videos straight from your phone all year long. There's a gift box included, makes it even easier in your busy life. For a limited time, visit AuraFrames.com and get $45 off Aura's best-selling Carver Matte Frames, named number one by Wirecutter, by using promo code MILEHIGHER at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code MILEHIGHER. This exclusive Black Friday and Cyber Monday deal is the best of the year, so order now before it ends. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
You need to listen to some Tony Robbins. Yeah. He'll get you motivated.
He does, yeah. There have been several times where I'm like,
Tony Robbins, like YouTube videos back in my early days.
You are like, Josh loves inspirational.
I still love inspirational
talks and...
And I liked his approach because it was more, it felt more like practical and more applicable to like the actual work world and less woo woo. You know what I mean? Like there's less of that going on. And just his, I think his voice is great and his cadence and the way that he delivers sort of messages is just very uplifting and gets you like energized.
You've spent a ton, especially when you were first breaking into the work world in the ITB days. You were.
I'd like, spend hours in the morning and I would just be like working on stuff and I'd be listening to video after video.
Who do you think's your favorite speaker? Alan Watts, maybe?
Yeah, probably Alan Watts is up there, but Eckhart Tolle is good too. But there's lots of good philosophers and motivational speakers out there.
What movie was Tony Robbins in?
White Chicks.
No way.
Was it White Chicks?
Pretty sure he
was. No, Shallow Hal.
Oh, Shallow Hal, that's right.
He's in Shallow Hal.
Yeah, Shallow Hal. I think he makes a couple appearances in a couple movies.
I don't care if that movie is problematic now in hindsight. That is, I just love that movie. It's fucked up, but
never even heard of it.
You know,
yeah,
what?
I was going to say I've never heard of that.
You're so young, Ian. Janelle, that doesn't surprise me, but Ian.
I don't know. Is Shallow Hal?
Yeah.
I like White Chicks, though.
You guys have never seen, you would like it. Actually, you'd probably hate it.
I don't know.
It's kind of, it's problematic in today's lens.
I'll make sure to watch it with a bunch of friends and be like, yeah, Kendall fucking loves this.
Kendall.
Gwyneth Paltrow in a fat suit? That's funny.
Yeah. They have.
That's funny.
Yeah, they put Gwen in a fat suit. Yeah, Tony Robbins, like, he's basically super shallow. And so Tony Robbins is like, you need to not be able to see what people look like. So he sees people that are like conventionally unattractive.
What society would say fat and ugly as beautiful.
Yeah. But he falls in love with their personality. It's like cheesy and ridiculous.
Like, love is blind.
Yeah. But then he.
In real life, yeah.
You know, the curse comes off and he like changes as a person. I saw it when I was 13.
We've watched that a few times.
It was the first PG-13 movie I was allowed to watch and I was like very excited about it. So I think that's why I like it so much. Anyway.
Well, back to the self-help industry. Boy, amount of money they're raking in. It's insane. $10 billion in annual sales, believe it or not.
Let's go.
It's not only the highest selling form of literature, but it's also the most widely published. So to put this into context, just when talking about the literature, all of adult fiction sales totaled just $3.62 billion in 2024, and young adult novels totaled $1.99. So over double what fictional novels are doing. This is how big self-help is. My grandfather loved a good self-help book.
I love it.
If you go to Costco right now, I guarantee you there's probably five self-help books for sale at Costco right now.
Your grandpa got me a self-help book from Costco.
Yeah, my grandpa loved giving self-help books. He had every self-help book you could possibly imagine in his decrepit library. that was an interesting place to be. But it's a huge industry. And that's just like... the literature side of things, the amount of money in seminars, appearances, events, online sales, digital content. I mean, we're talking multi-billion dollar industry. It's massive. So during the 20th century in the United States, the self-help industry experienced its first significant boom with Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. another one of my grandpa's favorites. Really, American self-help can be summed up by the title of Jessica Lam Shapiro's book, Promised Land, A Journey Through America's Euphoric, Soul-Sucking, Emancipating, Hornswoggling, and Irrepressible Self-Help Culture. It's interesting that these self-help gurus call themselves self-help providers. And isn't that kind of an oxymoron? Self-help provider?
You're right. That is weird.
Self-help.
You're supposed to be giving yourself the help.
But yet somebody's providing the self-help for you.
Huh. That's weird.
Jessica believed that in the United States, with the collapse of the traditional belief system, such as religion or government, middle-class Americans sought guidance through these newfound self-help gurus. And for a long time, they fell into one of three camps. For one, there's Stephen Covey, whose ideas were taught by James at the beginning of his self-help career. Stephen Covey emphasized the importance of maintaining values, particularly in corporate or professional settings, in order to enhance financial well-being. Meanwhile, the more spiritual New Agey part of things was cornered by Deepak Chopra, who believed that all humans were connected through a single interconnected unified field of energy that we would call consciousness. And this is how one can better connect with other people and to the world around them. In addition to attaining perfect health and a condition that is free from disease, never feels pain, then cannot age or die, he was also just revealed to be in correspondence with Jeffrey Epstein. So RIP to Deepak Chopra. I've never been a big fan of his.
Nah, man. He's just never been a chope goat. Freaky.
Never been a chope goat.
Would you call him a chope goat?
The chope goat.
There's just something about him when I'd listen to him. I'm like, something just seems ingenuine. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, Like, do you actually believe this or do you just sound really good?
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Like, he's got the whole vibe and he's got the whole delivery, but I don't know.
Never he reminds me of what's his, the way he delivers things is very,
guy? Our yoga? Yogi?
No.
Yogi Bhajan?
No, Bhajan.
Bhajan.
Not Yogi Bhajan. The guy who has like green eyes. He's very beautiful to look at. He's young and new in this world.
Young and new in self-help?
Yeah. He's huge. You guys don't know?
No.
Why am I forgetting his name?
Who?
He's got like a huge podcast. One of the biggest podcasts in the world.
Oh, the guy we talked about on the sesh before?
Yeah.
What's his name?
What's his fucking name?
Oh, God.
He's also been exposed as not being an Epstein, but... as plagiarizing.
Oh, Jay Shetty?
Yes. Jay Shetty.
Oh, Jay Shetty. Shetty. Okay.
Just some of the way he speaks sounds kind of Jay. Like, I think Jay Shetty got some of his inspiration from Deepak.
Then you've got, of course, Tony Robbins, who's really got the no bullshit, improve your life by improving your mindset style self-help that we see running rampant through the hustle culture. People that we see on Instagram are like, stop being fucking lazy and get off your ass and work.
Oh, I love those people who are like, You can have 4 days in one. If you break your day into like 6-hour chunks, never sleep.
There's so many of these influencers.
You lazy fuck sleeping. Why are you sleeping? You could be doing stuff every minute of every day.
I was going to say, that's why Tony Robbins, I think, is kind of a cut above these guys.
Totally.
Because he's not actually, I think these guys came from Tony. Like Tony is-
The style, yeah.
Right. He's just providing real, like you were saying, practical things you can do. I think that's why he is still so popular. Whereas these guys are like, if you think about things in terms of quantum mechanics, and it's
really
slice and dice it, because they're trying to stand out amongst the crowd of self-help gurus, you know? How do you make yourself different than everyone else before you? And it's very hard to do. There's like every flavor it exists.
Well, Brian Johnson.
Exactly.
Brian
Johnson, self-help through
what
you consider. Yeah, true. Both.
Both of them, I guess.
Both would be self-help gurus to some extent because they're just applying different, their niche is food. And how does food help you and make you live better and live longer?
The blood route or you can
longevity. They're everywhere. Mm-hmm. I get served self-help stuff all the time because I like to listen to them and just,
I do too.
I always like to be like, is this guy full of shit or not? And it's interesting to see the new spins that people have these days. Cause I saw the exact one. I was like, you can gain 4 more hours in your day if you just reorganize your schedule this way. Get up at 6 a.m. and immediately start working and doing emails.
Like I saw
then
it's
work
like 3
out. Then eat a little breakfast. Then go fucking take a nap. Then go. It's just like insane.
10-minute nap is all you need per day.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. I like Tony because he just keeps it real, man. Just makes you feel good.
I like him because he's hot.
Makes you feel good. So there's one thing that James noticed very early to his credit, nobody had combined all three of these teachings into one. The financial, the spiritual, and the personal sides of self-help were really all separate entities. He's like, how do I take these, connect them all together and package them in a way that nobody's ever seen them before? Because nobody had really taken this new age spirituality, combine it with like a Christian background so that you can kind of bridge the divide. So it's not too woo-woo where people are like, you're just a fucking crazy hippie. And he can pull in people who maybe grew up religious and grew up where it was like traumatizing to be in like a fire brimstone type church and kind of bridge that divide and then throw in, you know, a sprinkle of financial, you know, in business. Entrepreneurship mm-hmm. and all these other little tidbits he wanted to package in there. And so that's really what he did, is he's like, let's package it all together. And throughout the mid-90s and early 2000s, James' brand of self-help took shape. He published his first book, The Science of Success, in 1999, which did decently well. And then he had a follow-up, Practical Spirituality, How to Use Spiritual Power to Create Tangible Results. But still, he was struggling immensely in these early self-help years because he realized it was a lot harder than it looked.
It's competitive.
And like, how do you get people to listen to you when there's all these other people who they already have sort of, alliances with, who they respect, and mm-hmm. Fan bases,
really.
How do
you keep it fresh, too? You keep serving up new ideas. It's tough.
Yeah, especially when all your source material has already been accessed. You know what I mean? It'd be difficult to be a self-help person and create some actual new form, original idea.
Yep.
Because when you actually drill down on all of them, they're all pulling from existing ideas and existing philosophies that have already been there. They're just kind of like putting their own flavor on it. You know what I mean? Their own little seasoning, I guess. Season that self-help up. But James never had more than 3 employees, and he had a lot of turnover because, you'd be lucky to get paid, is the reality, because he would be using his credit cards for payroll. That's not
that's
good,
so
man.
That's bad, dude.
That's really bad. You shouldn't have employees if you need to pay their payroll with credit cards.
And I didn't even know you could do that, honestly.
Yeah, that's shocking to me.
I'm going to reach out to our payroll supervisor.
Just ask.
Can I remove my bank account? No, I'm pretty sure they all require, like, they won't even sign you up.
Couldn't you, like, rack up a bunch of reward points by doing that or something?
Yeah, I think this was more of, like, the time period. It was, like, the early 2000s. I think they still were
letting. Anything goes days.
Hard times, man. Hard times. You know, they had the recession. So maybe they're like, businesses got to do what they got to do. And so use your credit cards.
Put it on the card. All right.
I don't think they'll let you do that now. I think they'd be like, yeah.
I was going to research it.
I also wonder if part of it is because maybe it's the way he filed. It's like he wasn't like, these are my official employees. It was more like an independent contractor style. So maybe he had even more leeway that way.
Okay, that's a good point.
You can.
Oh,
whoa.
You can run payroll using a credit card, often through a third-party payroll service that allows you to fund payments with a credit card. This method can help with cash flow by allowing you to pay employees on time, even when funds are temporarily low. Oh, and you can also earn rewards.
I was going to say, we should start doing that for the reward points.
Yeah, Capital One, cash back.
Yeah, but I guarantee you there's a service fee on that.
Oh, so it says it involves processing fees and should be used strategically, not as long-term replacement.
Yeah, it's a temporary fix. Can't just like do that because you'll end up paying more. Yeah.
That's just wild to me, though, that you can do that, but whatever. What do I know?
Well, James didn't really start seeing real, tangible success until The Secret, Rhonda Byrne's book, came out, and that documentary that followed. And that's when he really started kind of getting some traction, because that book was hugely popular, selling over 30 million copies, translated into 52 languages. It was like the New Age Bible. It's like this new philosophy. But when you actually drill down into it, it's like, is it that like groundbreaking, or is it just kind of like...
Not really. I got really into it.
It's like packaged in a neat format that feels special and feels like it's this new...
I think of it also being called The Secret makes it extra enticing. I discovered it like 8 years after it came out, or like it was like 2013, 2014. Janelle and I got onto it too, because I downloaded it.
I remember you watching it.
I showed you the documentary, but first I read the book on a plane and I was like mind blown. When you're hydrated, everything in your body works better. I noticed it in my energy, in my mood, in my focus. Literally everything improves. And I was just at the physical therapist yesterday, and she was really drilling into me once again how much water I need to drink in pregnancy. Now, if you're looking for a way to up your hydration, Drip Drop is doctor-developed, proven fast hydration that helps your body and mind work better. It uses a precise ratio of electrolytes and glucose for rapid absorption, delivering three times the electrolytes and half of the sugar of leading sports drinks. So you'll feel results fast, more focus, better energy, improved mood, and even glowing skin. We love to see it. Drip Drop's science-backed formula is trusted by firefighters, medical professionals, and over 90% of top college and pro teams because it's engineered to rehydrate you faster and more effectively than water alone. And it actually tastes amazing. And it really does. I'm not just saying that. There are 16 original flavors and 80 sugar options as well that fit seamlessly into your routine. Definitely into my routine. Morning, post-workout, during the workout, or midday slump. It's always there for me. And to make it even easier for your busy lifestyle, Drip Drop has flexible subscription options so that you're never stuck without proven fast hydration. Whether you're on the job, you're at the gym, just living your daily life, you'll always have your drip on hand. And right now, Drip Drop is offering podcast listeners 20% off your first order. Just go to dripdrop.com and use code MILEHIGHER. That's dripdrop.com, promo code MILEHIGHER for 20% off. Stock up now before the heat hits hard. Dripdrop.com and use promo code MILEHIGHER now. But it also has some whack shit in the book that's not included in the documentary.
I think some of it's extremely problematic. I actually was talking about it in therapy a couple weeks ago when I was like, we were just talking about how, yeah, some of it is not good in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But I did like, when I read it, I was like.
Because doesn't it claim that like some of the most influential people throughout history like knew the secret as well?
Yes,
it was. Does. It's basically like. Socrates, Plato, like all of the big philosophers, anybody who had like a revolutionary idea. Like
understood the
idea.
Law of attraction.
Yeah. Albert Einstein.
Well, the law of attraction is a very, very old idea. Yeah. Just repackaged.
And then it was like this whole concept was kept under wraps from like the ordinary folk until now.
In the book, they talk about how people who died in 9/11 were there because they were like attracted to it through negative thoughts. And that part, I was like, what the fuck? Like, I remember being so disturbed by that. And I still think about it to this day. I'm just like, does that, I don't know. I got weird with it for a second, started thinking, especially when I really started believing in the law of attraction. Like, does that mean anything that bad happens to me or anyone else is because of like my own thoughts or their own thoughts?
Yeah.
And you can get real weird with that.
Especially if you have anxiety and you're prone to having intrusive thoughts that you don't even want.
Yeah.
Because there's times where I'm like, oh my God, I'll have a weird negative intrusive thought about something, and then I'm like, am I manifesting this subconsciously? Like, is it going to happen to me because my brain's just like thinking these things? And I've had to like relearn, like, no, that's not the case. Like, people who get cancer are getting cancer because they attracted it themselves or had negative thoughts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because that whole idea has really negatively impacted you. Do you think that kind of started from when we got into the secret? No, just maybe made it worse. Or
I mean, I don't think it made it worse necessarily, but sometimes I have thought about that. Like, I don't really subscribe to that anymore of like, because I don't know, it's hard. Sometimes I to an extent believe like what you put out, you get back and, you know,
too.
The thought of manifestation, whatever. But I'm also like, if I have an intrusive thought about getting sick, knock on wood, I try very hard to stop myself from starting to spiral up like, well, you're probably going to get it because you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I've even had that during like pregnancy where I'm like, if I have a bad thought of something, you know, I'm like worried that because I'm thinking it's going to happen if I think about it too much because of this damn book.
Yeah.
And the documentary, which I showed to Josh.
I've never seen the documentary.
Really?
No. I just
read
the book.
Oh, I'm so surprised.
Oh. No, but I read the book.
I feel
book.
Like I forced you to watch it.
No, I never watched it.
I feel like we like were hitting the bong and watching this.
Well, maybe. But I was, I remember reading it on the plane at one point. And I was like, I'm going to try this out. So I tried to manifest my luggage getting on the like carousel thingy.
Yes, I did the same thing.
And it like worked.
It worked for me too.
I was like, I was, you know, on the plane like, okay.
Or like with parking
when
spots.
I would do that too with parking spots. But I remember the first time I tried it was with the luggage. And of course, mine came out, which like I think part of that just might have been luck. Like, yeah, right? Just by
that,
chance.
That often happens, yeah. Actually.
Right.
It's not that rare.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole idea of the law of attraction is something that's, I believe in, like you said, to some extent. And there are anything big in my life that I have accomplished or things I have wished for, I have like really focused on manifesting.
Yeah,
but again, I don't know.
Like, but you're also working to like,
yes,
if you have
I've
a goal of getting
too.
Something or being somewhere, it's not just like, oh, well, I'll manifest it in my brain. Like you get off your ass and figure out a way to make it happen.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of like, that's the part that people forget, I feel like sometimes is you also, it doesn't, I don't know, in my opinion, like things aren't just going to randomly come to you because you're thinking about them.
Right.
You know, like.
But there's like my children, I feel like I've manifested, but I don't know if I actually did, but I like.
Well, people would argue that it implies that you are God.
Yeah.
Like that's the underlying
that we are all gods as human beings.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is like anybody who's religious would be like, yeah, that's just a bunch of bullshit because God is God. The devil is the devil, and you know, if you're somebody who believes that you can just like make shit happen for yourself, that is false. That God is the one who is making things happen because God has a plan for your life. And so I see why it's highly contentious, right? Because it just depends on your own personal beliefs. I think it's pulling from different ancient teachings and philosophies and things like that that go all the way back to ancient Egypt and some of these other mysticism and mystery schools and things like that. It's kind of pulling from these different ideas, getting into different things with like the Emerald Tablet and places like that where you're starting to get into magic. Mm-hmm. Is what you would call it. And that's interesting to me. I think the way that she packaged it though is a cool idea. How successful that is for everybody, I think it'd be very, very mixed results, as you can quickly see online if you do a Google result, you know, Google search for is the secret bullshit, you know what I mean? And you'll find like post after post after post of people be like, it's bullshit, it's a scam, it doesn't work. And then there's other people like, no, this worked perfectly for me. So it's like, I think it's subjective.
Maybe it's luck. And,
depending on how you do it. But that's the thing is nobody really knows. At the end of the day, none of us know whether it really worked, how this all fucking works anyway.
Yeah. Ian, was your mom into it or something?
Madly into it. I believe she bought the DVD for herself and all of her friends. Mm. But what was weird was she never let me watch it. But I think it, which I don't know what that was about. I was a young boy though. So maybe she was just like this.
I think they mentioned sex in it quite a bit.
Then
maybe.
Then that definitely would have been do not. But yeah, no, it definitely hit my house like a fucking, like a earthquake.
Really?
It was up in there. But my dad, you know, and I love both my parents, let me say this, but my dad is, you know, he's an engineer. He's a very straight-laced guy. So I remember just like any time my mom would try to talk about it, he's just like, okay, yep. Yep. Okay,
he's like,
yep.
Where's the proof?
He's like, you've cracked the code. Got it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was basically like, like, whatever. Yeah, sure. I'm happy you like this, honey.
Yeah, it was huge, dude. I remember, I mean, I'm not going to lie. And I was quite stoned watching the documentary the times that I did. But when I watched it, I always felt like, holy fuck, my life just changed. I had like an awakening.
But like, that's what you wanted. You
yeah,
can
exactly.
convince yourself of anything.
Yeah, and
if you
I was high
start...
enough, anything could have
Correct. And if you, like, it's like, oh, people are like, oh, I see things in sets of threes. Like, okay, if you look for it, then you'll see things in
yes,
sets of threes.
Yeah,
like,
totally. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's a lot... Your brain is very powerful. So if you're going to sit there with the intention of watching your documentary, stoned or not, and be like, this is going to change my life, you're going to convince yourself, oh my God, it's changed my life.
And maybe in a way that does change your life because you start thinking positively. And like, I don't know. There's something to it. Let us know in the comments.
But is it truly like a secret power you've now learned and can access?
I don't think so.
And the way that they kind of packaged it, that's kind of how it was packaged of like, this has been a secret.
Magic.
This has been a secret, a spell that has been hidden for centuries.
I feel like,
and now you know how to do it.
I think it was so powerful for me because it was like my first introduction to anything self-help, and I think anyone's first self-help experience is very, you know, powerful.
Well, the law of attraction is a very interesting idea, and it's one that I think almost everybody can get behind. It's like, if I'm a shitty person, I'm going to have shitty experiences.
That karma. And
other people are going to have a shitty experience with me, and therefore my shitty experience is going to continue. And that if I do the opposite of that, if I put good things out there, that good things will come back to me and good things will be attracted to this energy. And I think that's all very energy when you look at it, or interesting when you look at it from that perspective, like we're all just energy. And if we're all energy, or if you're a positive or negative energy, is a positive energy going to attract other positive energies, are going to attract negative energy? And how do you encounter that and get past that? So I don't know. It's interesting. Would I put my whole life on it and follow it blindly? Yes, I would. I do every day.
So yeah, The Secret is all about the law of attraction, which actually grew out of the 19th century teachings of Phineas Quimby, who took horse riding to relieve his body of pain caused by tuberculosis. And he stated that by reframing his mind through this activity, he created positive experiences for himself despite his condition. However, the law of attraction was first mentioned in 1855's The Great Harmonia. It's essential to note that the law of attraction is not a scientific law in the slightest, people.
No shit.
Uh-huh. And while the 20th century saw a vast number of books published on this idea, The Secret was first to put the concept into a documentary. And I think it was on Netflix.
It was on Netflix.
Yeah,
yes.
That's how I got it.
And this is a weird that I didn't even realize, but the documentary actually came first. The book.
It did. Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah, the documentary came first.
Okay.
Yeah, I think earlier, Josh, you didn't say that, but yeah, it did.
Bizarre, because it's like the only time you think of a book being adapted after a movie is like fucking Star Wars or whatever.
Yeah. You know,
isn't but it was
weird.
It was just that big of a hit.
Mm hmm. And of course, one of the main talking heads in the film was James Arthur Ray, who is burned in my brain. That's where I remember him from. And when we first brought up the name James Arthur Ray, I had no idea who was. But when I saw his face, it all came back to me in my stoner mind. But yeah, he went from being a marginally successful figure to a regular guest on Oprah after the documentary came out. And of course, he immediately capitalized on this newfound exposure by publishing his own book called Harmonic Wealth. Here he is talking about the book on daytime television.
Wrong, but romanticized optimism is not something that's going to serve us. And so what we've got to do is begin to first of all, take responsibility
for
our lives. You know, Obama's not going to save us. I mean,
one person God can't change the world. Wait a fucking second.
Take responsibility for your shit.
Obama's not going to save your ass. That's awesome.
And then the second thing we have to do is recognize that, first of all, everything goes through seasons. We're in the winter season of our economy right now, but without fail, spring always follows winter. And so the things that we're doing right now are the seeds we're planting for our upcoming spring. As we recognize that and we recognize that we're responsible, then the last thing we need to do is realize that we have the ability within us to create anything that we desire and deserve.
Right now, we're in the economic winter. What can we do right now to ensure a plentiful spring?
Well, we need to analyze where we've been.
Right.
You know, what have we done in the past? What worked well? What didn't work well in our last spring and summer? And then we make adjustments. And then finally, we act. You know, we must act in a new direction, taking those lessons and moving them forward. Some actions we can take in the winter is, number one, we can read more books. We can improve ourselves. Our results are a reflection of us, of who we are. We can listen to more CDs. We can go to more seminars. We can maybe go back and take that college course. As we grow, our results will grow. And as we take action, we'll move in new directions.
Notice how he snuck in, we can go to more seminars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's like,
only $30,999. You can get all of those.
God, those pillows are so early 2000s. I hate them.
What?
Pillows.
They're terrible. Look at the TV. Throwback.
That's fine.
It's a brick house. Everybody that knows me knows I love meat. I love good protein. I get kind of whiny if I don't get protein with every meal. And you know what I love? ButcherBox. This episode is brought to you by ButcherBox, and they're making it easier than ever to get some of the highest quality proteins out there delivered right to your door, right into your fridge, and then right into your bellies. Obviously, cook the meat first, but man, I am so impressed with ButcherBox. They sent me a box, and I was just jumping for joy when it came. It was this massive box full of all sorts of meat. It also had salmon in it, and the salmon looked absolutely scrumptious, beautiful color. I'm very excited to cook that. It's still in my freezer, but I've already broken out and cooked the ribeye steaks, the grass-fed beef, absolutely delicious. The marbling on these things, really, really impressive for something that gets delivered to you through the mail. I'm honestly blown away at all the different proteins that they sent. The quality of it, the taste of it is top notch. I think it's honestly better than a lot of the meats I get at my local grocery store. They have over 100 premium protein choices, and they all deliver straight to your door. And these include 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. For nearly a decade, ButcherBox has led the industry with meat and seafood that's antibiotic-free, hormone-free, and independently verified, so you know you're getting quality meat. It's a cleaner, more trustworthy version of what you'd find at the grocery store delivered right to your door. And with the holidays right around the corner, make sure your fridge is stocked with all the proteins you need to serve your family and friends a delicious meal. As an exclusive offer, our listeners can get free steak in every box for a year, plus $20 off your first box when you go to butcherbox.com/milehigher. That's right, your choice of filet mignon, New York strip, or ribeye in every box for an entire year. Can't believe I'm saying that. Plus $20 off your first box and free shipping always. That's butcherbox.com/milehigher. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Is anything that you just heard something you've never heard before?
I didn't know we were supposed to read it.
Did you know that you should go back and look at what's worked in the past and what hasn't? I never thought that for a moment. I only look forward.
Periods of ups and downs and reflection during the downs. Yeah, totally new to me.
I thought that Obama was going to save us.
Yeah, fuck.
I thought that.
God damn, he was right.
Well,
it's nothing that the Bible couldn't give me. All I need is the Bible.
I mean, honestly, you're right. Like, it's
Bible already been there, dude.
Mm-hmm. Harmonic Wealth, speaking of the Bible, was also the first time that James described his travels to the Holy Land.
Oh.
And that his failing first business as a self-help guru allowed him to be exiled from wealth before he finally received his teachings in the cave of Moses in Mount Sinai.
Sinai.
Sinai. Thank you, Ian. Again?
Does anybody believe that?
No,
I do not believe
this is
he
not
went
true. This is
and
bullshit.
Found the cave that, which first of all, Moses was, I believe, on top of Mount Sinai when
you would know
he got the
than
tablets.
Me.
I'm pretty sure. Maybe he was in a cave. I don't recall. But I don't see how that helps him at all, other than it sounds cool to say that he went to where Moses went. Mm-hmm. And how the hell, is there a marker?
Yeah, how does he know?
This here stands where Moses received.
He brought a selfie stick and took a picture there. So another important factor contributing to James's popularity was the timing of the book. In 2008, we know it happened. The United States fell into the Great Recession.
Thanks,
and millions...
Obama.
Hey, this is what he saved us from. Millions of Americans were faced with poverty and insecurity. And James's book and other pieces of media, like The Secret, offered a relatively affordable set of teachings that basically said if you improve how you think, your finances are going to improve too. And of course, if your finances had improved, you could sign up for one of James's $1,000 seminars to ensure that you really did change your life for the long run.
From his explosive rise in popularity in 2006, James became well known for his seminars. In his books and daytime television appearances, James presented himself with the same demeanor as other self-help gurus. You know, he's warm, he's affectionate, he's got that charisma, he's got that charm, and he was also accepting. However, his personality during these events was anything but that. He focused on providing breakthroughs for his attendees, pushing them to their emotional end, sometimes physical limits, and seeing them rewarded when they realized that they could triumph. Clips from these seminars show James causing grown men to cry and even arguing with one woman whom he called out her shit, or called her out on her shit. Let's take a look at some clips where he's talking about manifestation and discipline real quick.
Every single person, I know them all, every single person in my industry who's at the top of their game is busy.
Whoa.
Busy. You've got to be in motion.
Kept fucking
busy. You
got to
move your feet. You must go 3 for 3. Your thoughts, feelings, and actions. You look at anyone who's not creating what they desire and deserve, and one of those components is missing. One of them's missing. I guarantee it.
We heard you.
They might be thinking real clearly and visualizing and feeling oh so good, but they're sitting on their duff.
Doff.
Doff.
That's a new one.
I like that. I'm going to start using that. Stop sitting on your Doff. For whatever
reason, my mom will tell you, from the time I was this big, I was really disciplined. You know, she'll tell you, he was the most disciplined kid I've ever met in my life. And I was really disciplined. I was just getting, whatever it took, I got the job done. I'll do whatever it takes. Go, go, go. Do it, do it. I don't care if I'm tired. You know, I don't care if I don't feel like it. I just do it. Go. And yet, there's a large part of my life where I had some real, real difficult times. I mean, I've been on the skinny branches several times in my life. Teetered on the edge of bankruptcy. Teetered hard twice.
Didn't teeter. He just,
he's just straight bankrupt.
I mean, seriously, I don't care what your challenge is today. I've most probably been through it and more.
Okay. Got it, man. All right. Let's take a look at a promotional vid for his seminars that he desperately wants you to go to.
What happens in the live events is that they really get to roll up their sleeves and put those things into action. All the things I do are highly experiential.
Oh, welcome to the jungle.
And very energetic.
These three people like that. Ready? Go, 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 go!
Whoa.
Energy flows where attention goes. When you shift your attention, that world that you created collapses and a new world emerges forth. If I told you exactly what you needed to do to accomplish anything and everything you choose to
it's
accomplish.
It's always these big blanket statements.
Would you do
everything.
Anything and everything you want to
Wait,
do.
A real secret? No or yes?
No or yes.
Here's the real secret.
Yeah, he does that. Wait, pause it. He says no or yes, and he also says false or true. Have you noticed that? No or yes, false. It's just little things like that trying to stand out from other people.
It's the call and response. I actually think that's very preacher-like, too.
Yes,
like,
it is. Yeah. Preachers do that a lot. Yeah.
Right. It's
Can
stand
I get an amen?
Mind.
Right.
Yeah. Amen. Uh-huh. You know, it's like, it's that same style.
I also like how he's doing his interviews in the car, too, to appear like he's so busy, he has to do this on the way to the airport.
What's important is that when participants didn't present a specific challenge, they have something to go to, whether it was a problem at home or a problem with a relationship. James would manufacture them to make people feel like they were still doing something because, again, they're paying to be there. And if somebody's there, doesn't have anything, you know, notable or stands out for them problem-wise that he can actually solve for them, he starts creating the problems for them and drilling into them until he finds something that he can start picking apart. He'd often have participants at a seminar sit during his speeches with a large, like, brick, like a basically like a cement stepping stone, it kind of looks like, that you'd put in your yard on their laps. And then at the end of the weekend, he'd have everyone come up on stage and then hi-ya, karate chop that bitch if they could. And for the most part, people would, which that's going to get you amped if he's like, yeah, do it. And you, it's harder than it looks.
That would get me amped, I'm not going to lie.
So people, and it's like, it's giving people a physical representation of breaking through, of like getting, you overcame something this weekend. And so, yeah, people get amped for it. People were like, yeah, cheering, getting wild when people would do it. But of course, not everyone broke through. There was one seminar using plywood instead of a brick. Different thing completely. A woman shattered her hand after James forced her to hit that plywood again.
Aye.
But the seminar activities weren't limited to just board and brick breaking. In early 2009, during a seminar at Disneyland in California, James instructed his participants to spend the weekend acting as if they were homeless, which included having no cell phones, no place to sleep, and wearing tattered clothing. Just a few days into the exercise, a 46-year-old woman named Colleen Conaway jumped to her death from a balcony in Horton Plaza. I think it was like a 30-foot fall in a massive mall in San Diego. And a wrongful death lawsuit was filed against James, claiming that he knew Colleen had gone missing, but ordered the rest of the group to leave the mall without her. On top of that, he did not contact the police until more than 6 hours after her death. That is super sketchy. Since she had not given up her cell phone identification prior, authorities labeled her as a Jane Doe until James eventually faxed over her information. So they couldn't even identify this victim because James had wanted them all to be homeless for the weekend, the seminar. And then, of course, there are the spiritual warrior seminars, which again, like we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, these are the 5-day-long outings. And it's the most expensive thing you can attend, $10,000 minimum. To find spiritual awakening with James, and with that inflated price tag came inflated challenges along with it. Aside from the standard running on hot coals, trust falls, and fasting for vision quests on long, intense hikes, James invented a new technique as well. Typically, this method would involve two participants holding a piece of rebar between their necks. Then using nothing but the strength of their neck, they would attempt to bend the rebar.
Dude, clips of this really bothered me.
Which rebar
is so gross.
Is like used to fortify concrete.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. It's like, yeah. Ugh.
Ah, and your neck, dude.
And obviously there was tons of injuries from doing this. The most substantial came when James replaced the rebar with a wooden arrow. And when the arrow inevitably snapped, the arrowhead jumped up and injured the face of one participant. But that leads us to James's sweat lodges, which it's important to note that Native Americans have been practicing using sweat lodges for generations. This practice is called Inipi, or to live again by the Lakota people. And the sweat lodge is really a purification rite that helps the participant enter a state of humility and undergo spiritual rebirth. The lodge itself is constructed from 16 willow trees and covered with animal hides, while the door of the sweat lodge faces east and is covered with dirt. The ceremony and construction of the ritual are particular, as it is a sacred and important rite. The door to the lodge is thrown open four times during the ritual to represent the four ages, and on the fourth, participants emerge from the lodge, transitioning from the complete darkness to light, and all that is impure is left behind in that lodge.
However, that's not how James did it, of course. Despite claiming to be well-versed in Lakota customs, James's lodge was simply constructed with plastic tarps and blankets that sealed the heat in so effectively that it would be difficult for people to even see. And while the Lakota tradition is very particular about when the fire is made more intense and when the water is thrown on the rocks, James would just do whatever the fuck he wanted to. There had been numerous instances in James's sweat lodges of participants vomiting, passing out, forgetting who they were. But once again, at the spiritual warrior retreats, James was the leader. He was the boss. He was the king. From 2006 to 2009, participants could only join a spiritual warrior retreat if they had attended all of the previous seminars, totaling $20,000. You like that move? You have to go to all these other things, reach these milestones, become certified, basically, before you can attend to become a spiritual warrior.
It's giving Scientology.
You got to work the levels. Yep.
It's giving MLM.
Yeah.
It's giving.
Yes.
I mean, he literally has it laid out in a pyramid.
Yep. Yeah. Also, real quick, many of these individuals were also members of James's secret group, the World Wealth Society, which carried a hefty annual membership fee of $100,000 a year.
That is
to be in a stupid fucking society.
That's insane. That's more than most country clubs out there.
Yep.
They at least got a pool.
Yeah. What do you get for that?
They at least got a restaurant you could use, a golf course.
Mm-hmm.
James, you're just paying him to be in this group with him.
Yep.
And get like exclusive access to him, which we kind of saw this with like Teal Swan and other self-help gurus. They kind of create this inner circle elite level that once they feel like they get popular enough that they can charge because there's so many people that's following them that they're like, oh, we know people will pay insane sums to get access to me. And then that's what they do. They create that a little secret society for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's even the same for like, I don't know, these some hustle culture dudes on Instagram or whatever. They'll be like, spend $10,000 a month, you can be in my exclusive Discord where I shout at you. And it's, you know, it's all down the line. It's not just in the self-help industry anymore. Kind of as extended out of there.
That shouldn't surprise me.
Wow. Of course. You've never seen like people you follow from high school being like, I'm a wealth creator, click my link.
Yeah. Or to get like Bitcoin and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crypto bros.
It's everywhere now.
Yeah.
All industries.
Yeah. Everyone knows the way.
Or they'll like fly first class to like some fucking seminar thing. Like, this is my life. If you want to join, click here.
I can't join.
You want to be in this cabin
exactly,
with me?
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. You want to be sipping Dom Perignon in first class? Click here right now, brother.
Dom Perignon.
You click on it and it's like, pay $69.99 to get the reveal of what you need to do.
Yeah.
So keep in mind, people who went to the spiritual warrior retreat, you know, were not only really committed to James and his brand of self-help at this point. I mean, they're in on James, but they have also invested and spent a considerable amount of money to be there.
Which is important to mention.
Yeah.
Because when you have this kind of financial liability on the line, you're going to want to take advantage of it, right? Like anybody that's going to this spiritual warrior retreat is going to be like, I want to get every little ounce squeezed out of this retreat because I'm paying all this money to be there. So, and at that point, you really do believe in this person. You believe that they are going to lead you to where you want to go, that you're seeking this experience and that James really does. If you're spending that kind of money with somebody, you are a full-blown believer at that point and a full-blown follower. And that's where it's at this level that you start kind of wondering, are we entering cult territory? You know, we're starting to have some cult-like tendencies going on here. Mm-hmm.
The difference here is, as we mentioned before, the 2008 financial crash affected millions of Americans, including James Arthur Ray. So while his seminars were still bringing in thousands of dollars, he still had to pay his ever-increasing staff in addition to tens of thousands just to produce these events. And fewer people, of course, were signing up during this time for the complete package, and they needed an escape. And that's why James offered attendees the option to skip straight to the spiritual warrior retreat. Become a spiritual warrior for the 2009 retreat at Angel Valley in Arizona.
If you're a business owner out there, you need to know about Upwork. As a business owner myself and a longtime user of Upwork, I gotta say, it is a service that I don't know what we would have done without it. Upwork has come in clutch so many times for so many sort of niche projects where I don't necessarily have someone on staff that can do the project, and it allows me to go out and find the top talent out there and hire them just for that project. But we've also used Upwork for research, for writing. They've come in clutch when our writers are gone for extended periods of time, or maybe we're in between writers. Upwork has a vast amount of talent out there available at your disposal whenever you need it, and they make it extremely easy to set up. They handle all the paperwork. It's so simple to find top-rated talent out there. So instead of spending weeks sorting through random resumes, Upwork Business Plus sends a curated short list of expert talent to your inbox in hours. Trusted top-rated freelancers vetted for skills and reliability and rehired by businesses like yours. Upwork Business Plus really makes it easier to find the talent that you need for whatever job or project you might have at your business. I love it. I know if you have a need for this, you will love it too. Right now, when you spend $1,000 on Upwork Business Plus, you'll get $500 in credit. Just go to upwork.com/save now and claim the offer before December 31st, 2025. Again, that's upwork.com/SAVE. Scale smarter with top talent and $500 in credit. Terms and conditions apply. So kind of like going full circle with this episode, getting back to Beverly Bunn, if you remember at the very, very beginning, we mentioned her. So Beverly Bunn arrived to the Spiritual Warrior Retreat. She was excited to see a familiar face in Kirby Brown, her artist friend that she had met months earlier at the Harmonic Wellness Seminar. However, the comfort in seeing a friend soon changed to fear as the two finished signing in. They were greeted by a member of James's dream team who held a pair of scissors. And as a way of showing commitment to James and the retreat, James wanted every warrior to shave their head as part of what he called the samurai game. Both Vanessa and Kirby laughed at this, but eventually they both would succumb to James's pressure. Once the 58 attendees arrived at the retreat, James had all of them watch clips from the Tom Cruise film, The Last Samurai, and listen to accompanying talks. A samurai portion of the week lasted 3 days, during which they were forced to play this samurai game. And of course, at this point, they had already shaved their heads. Another element of this whole retreat was sleep deprivation, which is never a good thing. And while James had lined up intense events and talks for each day, he urged participants to sleep as little as possible. And since they had spent $10,000 to be there, I mean, if you're the person you're there to see who you're wanting to get something from and is telling you in order to get this special something I have for you, you need to do X, Y, Z, you're gonna probably listen to it, right?
At least try to do it, yeah.
According to Vanessa, James played God. He actually had on a white robe with a gold belt. And you couldn't talk to God. If you talked to God, he killed you. One of the participants who challenged James was Kirby, who still did not want to shave her head. James actually screamed, "Die! Die!" at her until she fell to the ground, and James forced her to lie totally still for hours on end. She was so desperate to urinate that she had to hold back vomit. I mean, that is a very uncomfortable place to be.
It's disgusting. God.
Vanessa also approached James before the Samurai game, expressing that she did not want to shave her head, despite 40 of the participants having already done so. James responded, "I don't give a fuck what you do. Shave your head. Don't shave your head. It really doesn't matter." Which is kind of a weird thing to say, because it's like, why do you make everybody else do that? Yeah. Maybe just like, let's just see if they'll blindly follow me and just, there's no significance to this at all.
Yeah, I think he really got, I think he, there's a part of him that really enjoyed watching people suffer too.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
That is like this power control over.
Yeah, or like be upset. And I don't know. I think he enjoyed having that kind of power over people, making people do things that made them uncomfortable. And
not out of like, I want to help you,
the
but
the bars in the neck and the hands. And I think it was all, and then what we're going to see later.
So he's like kind of sadistic.
I think in my opinion, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
A little bit.
She later went on to say, "The way we were treated was really bizarre. After paying $10,000, we were told you can't talk to James unless you are told you can. He doesn't eat with you. If he drives in the golf cart, you're not allowed to wave at him or acknowledge him or even say hi."
See, this is, in my opinion, cult territory.
Yeah. Well, he just made it that by acting like this. Then right after the Samurai game, the group was led into the desert for a vision quest. They're going to spend the next 36 hours in the desert without any food or water, because that's what you do when you're looking for inspiration and lightning. The group returned on the final day, October 8th, to now participate in the now infamous Sweat Lodge. James said to the group, "It will be the most intense experience, the most intense heat that you've ever experienced in your life. I guarantee that. You will feel as if you're going to die. But you see, the true spiritual warrior has conquered death and therefore has no fear and no enemies in this lifetime or the next."
Shut up.
"Because the greatest fear that you'll ever experience is the fear of what? Death. You will have to get to the point where you surrender and it's okay to die." Which this is a very eerie thing for him to say, especially before what happens next.
Yeah. So imagine this, 56 members crowd into the sweat lodge, which was less than 5 feet high in the middle, 30 inches on the sides, and 24 feet across, and only had one single way in and way out. And while the door on the Lakota sweat lodge was thrown open after only four rounds, James's sweat lodge sessions went on for 8, which lasted about 2 hours. By the end of the second round, a man had already stood up, staggered, and nearly fallen onto the pile of hot stones. By the end of the fourth round, Vanessa said, "I need to get out." And other people were saying they were having trouble. But James kept saying, "You can get through this. It's mind over matter. Ignore what your body is telling you." Then during the fifth round, an unnamed man became disoriented. He started screaming and yelling. And then he actually did fall into the pit and badly burned his arm. Then people started vomiting, others started passing out, and a man named James Shore dragged a woman out of the tarp before he sat next to Kirby, only to realize that she had stopped breathing. He tried to get James's attention, but James wouldn't hear it. James said, "Everybody quiet down. I'm in charge here. The door is now closed. And this round has now begun, and we will deal with that at the end of the next round." Yeah, that's really what he said. It wasn't until the end of the 8th and final round that people left, with numerous people having convulsions, passing out, vomiting, and foaming at the mouth. Once everyone had barreled out of the tent, Vanessa realized that Kirby was nowhere to be seen. So she went back in and discovered her friend on the ground, unable to move. They brought her outside and attempted to resuscitate her and the man who sat next to her, James Shore. Vanessa said James Ray was standing about 10 feet from where they were doing CPR on Kirby and James Shore. And she said, "I looked to see if there was any expression on his face, any kind of emotion, but he just stood there the entire time. He never helped anybody. He never did anything. He just stood there."
Which the lack of action on his part speaks volumes about his character, what he really thinks of these people that are there. Mm-hmm. And I think it kind of affirms your feelings and thoughts about him of like,
I think he gets off.
Might be like slightly evil. Like, this is pretty fucked up in this situation where all these people who are there to see you, that believe in you, that are literally funding your life and you are treating them like this. You are not concerned. You're more concerned about yourself than everybody else.
Not worried if they're going to die.
Yes. Knowing, full well knowing that people do die in sweat lodges.
Not being concerned after these people have already died. Not only that, he disappeared from the group and returned to the lodge where he then showered. Dude took a fucking shower.
While people are sprawled out laying on, it looks like a
crime scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a crime scene.
Like mass casualty event.
Right, right.
Unreal. And then he, what does he do? Of course, calls his lawyer, and his lawyer told him to leave the scene completely. Other people who were inside the tent had to call paramedics because James wasn't there to do it. Eventually, 19 people
yeah, that's a lot.
Were transported to the hospital after suffering heat exhaustion and kidney failure. And Kirby Brown, James Shore, and Liz Newman all passed away due to James Ray's sweat lodge. Just a horrific death. And here's sweat lodge survivor Shauna Bowen talking about the immediate aftermath.
You're, should I say, at least a fan of Mr. Ray's. What is what it goes through your mind as you came upon this sweat lodge and you realized that this happened under his supervision?
It was a very confusing time for me. And I have to say that when the people were there and needed to be tended to, I just kind of went into crisis counselor mode, and I wasn't thinking. I was just tending to one woman in particular until the ambulance took her. After that, as I processed, I felt myself very confused. I looked up to this man, and given what I know about Sweat Lodge and what I saw, I was confused, emotional, and wondering what he had planned to say or do or how he planned to respond to what had happened.
So the next morning, James took the first flight out of Arizona and continued hosting seminars. He just went about life as normal after this.
He's like, I can't miss my seminars.
Yeah. He said at an event in Denver right after the ordeal, I've certainly learned a lot in the past 10 days. When he did speak with survivors, he said that those who died were having so much fun that they chose not to come back.
It's diabolical.
He really said that shit. Evil.
Having so much fun. What are you talking about?
Dude's out of his fucking mind. And then James's family wrote a check to Kirby's family for $5,000, which again is half of what she paid to be there.
Can't even get a fucking refund.
Can't get a full refund.
No.
Okay.
Here's Kirby's family speaking in the wake of the Sweat Lodge deaths about the negligent actions of James Arthur Ray.
And you say, this guy's got ideas that I want to get information from. Do you entrust him to a degree to know what's best for you?
Well, I think when you see someone who writes books and has CDs and has been on Oprah, I think you make an assumption about their qualifications. We believe he was inadequate to be doing most of the things he did on this retreat outside of the Sweat Lodge. These murders and these 55 victims, because we
feel like they were murdered.
Oh, they were definitely murdered. There's no question. There's no question they were murdered. We think it's lucky that 55 or 52 other people survived. Mm-hmm. What they did to them through sleep deprivation and a 36-hour fast, and they came off the fast with a breakfast buffet like it was the Holiday Inn. This is not the way you do these physical things. Mm-hmm. And what we have is a motivational speaker who really tried his hand at very dangerous and trying physical games. Yeah. And he was literally putting people's lives at risk. And he should have seen the signs. There were other people who got sick at other events in previous years.
Yeah. What do you want people to know about this? I mean, you literally, the funeral was just over the weekend.
I want, first and foremost, I want people to know my sister. You know, the truly beautiful, inspirational, unbelievable woman that she was. She was everybody's best friend. Mm. I want people to know that.
Yeah.
And our family feels strongly about making sure this doesn't happen again. Nobody should be going through what we're going through right now.
Yeah.
She was taken from us. I want her back. Mm. We know that's not going to happen. But we also feel strongly about the fact that there were other victims, and we think they need help. Mm. We think they need professional counseling to get through this traumatic experience.
Wow.
Unreal.
Man. And he's just off getting ready for his grand seminar. They were having too much fun.
But James, of course, didn't let any of this deter him. Even his members were denouncing him, and his members of the Oglala Lakota delegation sued him for misusing their practices that resulted in the death of three people.
Finally, James himself was arrested on February 3rd, 2010, and he was charged with 3 counts of manslaughter. His bond was set at $5 million, which James could not afford because despite having claimed to have earned $21 million in 2008, his actual net worth at the time of the arrest was approximately negative $4.2 million, as he had to settle 3 lawsuits stemming from the Sweat Lodge incident, which totaled $3 million. His bond was lowered by $500,000, and James was able to be released to prepare for his trial, which focused on the fact that those participating were aware of the dangers of the Sweat Lodge. But during witness testimony, the truth was anything but.
She was calling, "James, help me, James, help me." And he looked at her. He heard her yell because she was loud, and he did not come over.
Amira Hamilton owns the land where James Ray held the 2009 Sweat Lodge ceremony that left 3 people dead.
"If you told me not to call 911, I said I have to tell you."
Others told the judge of dragging out victims in a state of anguish.
"And her eyes are floating back in her head and her face is all bloody. And you know, God. I just dragged her away out of the doorway because somebody else was coming out behind them throwing up."
Ray's lawyers established that participants had free will to stay inside the Sweat Lodge.
"You're not telling us that anybody from James Ray's organization or James Ray himself was forcing anybody to stay in any Sweat Lodge?"
"Not at all."
But prosecutors did allude to physical force in a 2007 ceremony when a former employee testified half the people even then got sick, saying that Ray's ceremonies got more aggressive over the years.
"They were more pushy, trying to get people in, and they actually tried physically to push one lady back into the Sweat Lodge."
More witnesses are expected to testify over the next couple days, a window into what will likely be key evidence in the trial.
Now, what would James's argument be, the defense's argument? Seemed pretty cut and dry that the choices made by James during the Sweat Lodge led to the deaths of his 3 participants. However, the defense attempted to argue something extremely far-fetched. The defense's second witness was forensic doctor Ian Paul, whom they referred to throughout the trial as Dr. Paul. He believed that the medical examiners had messed up when they determined that the participants had died of heat stroke. According to him, the participants died of organophosphate poisoning due to chemicals used by the property owners on the wood that was burned inside of the Sweat Lodge. So now putting complete blame onto the property owners who've owned this retreat center, this piece of land for a long, long time, have had plenty of other successful events there, by the way. There were numerous issues with this line of defense. For one, it was quickly determined that the property owners of the retreat had never used organophosphates anywhere on the property, and there was absolutely no evidence that it was present at the Sweat Lodge. Plus, there's also the fact that there were nearly 60 people in the Sweat Lodge at the time, including James. So if they were poisoned due to this wood burning with these organophosphates on them, then you would have thought and expected to see other people have died from this other than just 3. Again, there was 19 people that were all affected by the Sweat Lodge. So that was kind of like, well, there was a lot of people. But again, I think you would have expected to see more people were actually poisoned and died as a result of that. This episode is, of course, brought to you by our friends over at Rocket Money. I love Rocket Money. It's one of the first apps I pop into in the morning. It's just, it provides that peace of mind, really, because it gives you complete visibility over all your finances, the ability to take control of your finances, whether it's budgeting, whether it's canceling subscriptions, whether it's just checking what bills are coming out of your account and when. Rocket Money gives you all that information in a beautiful, convenient location, in their dashboard. I'm really impressed with it. I recommend it to absolutely everybody because it really is the best way to manage your finances. If you're not familiar with Rocket Money, it's a personal finance app that helps find and cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Shows you all of your expenses in one place, including those pesky subscriptions, which is really nice because you know we all have a million of those these days and you want to make sure you're only paying for the ones that you use. And Rocket Money can help you cancel those with a few taps. Not only that, you can upload a copy of your utility bill. Rocket Money will scan your utility bills and let you know if they might be able to negotiate a lower rate for you. You just give them some account information, they do the rest. It's an amazing service. I haven't seen it anywhere else, and it actually works. You'll get alerts if your bills increase in price, which is really nice so that maybe there's an issue. Maybe the electric company's charging you more than you were supposed to be charged, or your water, gas bill, whatever it may be. Rocket Money is going to alert you when it sees an uptick, so you can go check on your usage and possibly see if there's an issue. Rocket Money has saved users over $2.5 billion, including over 880 million in canceled subscriptions alone. Their 10 million members save up to $740 a year when they use all the app's premium features. I pay for the premium version because I think it's a well worthwhile tool, because ultimately it will save you money by getting control over your finances and eliminating the waste. So cancel your unwanted subscriptions and reach your financial goals faster with Rocket Money. Go to rocketmoney.com/milehigher today. That's rocketmoney.com/milehigher. Check it out, rocketmoney.com/milehigher. And more than that, procedures followed by the first responders to treat heat stroke would have actually killed anyone affected by poisoning as opposed to saving their lives. After the prosecution tore this argument apart, the defense took a different tactic. Instead, they argued that because James did not physically restrict anyone from leaving the sweat lodge, that they had free will and could have left at any moment, which seems like a very, I mean, I see why it's logical that they would say that. They even began to blame the employees of James and other participants for not acting when they believed something had gone wrong, which again was not true. At the end of the trial on June 22nd, 2011, the verdict was given for James. Let's listen to it.
Of manslaughter as a result of the death of Kirby Brown as follows. Not guilty. If we, the jury, duly impaneled and sworn in the above entitled action and upon our oaths, do find the defendant, James Arthur Ray, on the offense of negligent homicide as a result of the death of Kirby Brown as follows. Guilty. The above is the unanimous finding of the jury. Signed, foreman of the jury. Verdict count two, caption omitted. We, the jury, duly impaneled and sworn in the above entitled action upon our oaths, do find the defendant, James Arthur Ray, on the offense of manslaughter as a result of the death of Lisbeth Newman as follows, not guilty. We, the jury, duly impaneled and sworn in the above entitled action and upon our oaths, do find the defendant, James Arthur Ray, on the offense of negligent homicide as a result of the death of Lisbeth Newman, as follows, guilty. The above is the unanimous finding of the jury, signed foreman of the jury.
So there you go. At the end of the day, he escaped the manslaughter charges and ultimately was only found guilty of three counts of negligent homicide, which obviously carries much lesser punishments for James, which as a result of this verdict, his defense argued that James should receive the minimum punishment as he previously had a quote-unquote clean record, which is certifiably untrue. As we mentioned, a participant died during one of his previous seminars, a fact that the defense successfully kept out of the trial since the San Diego police never investigated it. But James was found guilty on only one aggravating factor causing distress to the victim's families, as opposed to the other factors that would have made him eligible for more serious manslaughter charges and punishments. And ultimately, James was sentenced to just 2 years in prison.
Disgusting.
Despite the three followers of his dying in the sweat lodge and the one from the prior seminar. George Brown, Kirby's father, described James's sentence as a damn joke, which kind of agree with that. But following his release from prison, because he was only in there for a short amount of time, James did an interview with Piers Morgan and continued his seminars. This time, the central point was how he grew from the sweat lodge deaths and how he was actually the victim due to personal issues happening in his life at the time. This was, yeah. I mean, this tells you everything you need to know.
Your head. What was going through your head when you heard guilty, negligent homicide?
Well, if I can back up a little bit, I think the most difficult thing I could ever imagine is investing your entire life in helping people and then finding them getting hurt.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
Right, dude.
He's such a victim. God.
It's just the antithesis of everything that I had ever stood for or wanted. And so that anguish has continued every single day since that moment on October 8th. When I was sentenced, the hardest thing was that my mom, this is going to be tough. My mom had cancer. And so the first thing that went through my mind, and I was her caretaker, and I had always been kind of the caretaker for the family. And so the first thing that went through my mind was, oh my God, you know, what's going to happen to mom?
Maybe you shouldn't have killed people.
Like you said, he's the victim. Ultimate is he victim. Saying sorry no, at all in this all. Interview? Like, no.
He doesn't feel bad at all. He has zero remorse for what happened no. to these people.
Well, he doesn't think he did anything.
Yeah. Right?
Like, I think in his heart of hearts, he really doesn't think he no. was responsible no, for this at all. No, I don't think
until the end he ever...
He's more upset that this happened, this tragic accident this happened
to him.
And ruined his career yeah. above everything else.
And I was just trying to help people my whole life, and this is how God repays me.
It just seems like...
Yeah, he's so gross, dude. He's such a narcissist freak. So while James never reached the heights of Tony Robbins or Deepak Chopra, he continued to do seminars and write books and release podcasts with his post-prison wife, Bersaba, who herself is just a crazy-ass lying basket case freak. Could go on and on about that, but we will not. But yeah, he came out of prison and was like, I'm going to still fucking do this. And there were times where they were going over like sales and stuff, and they told, I don't know what they were selling, but they told him that they had sold 10 in the last quarter, and he was like shocked. Like, you really think you're going to, you killed people. You don't get it? He's just totally out of his mind. But yeah, even today, you can still purchase packages of his teaching called 21st Century Alchemy. For $4,197, currently half off for Black Friday, out, guys. Run out.
Out of his mind.
I know.
And whoever is writing this coming now is out of their mind that anybody's yeah. going to pay for that.
Mm-hmm. Then on January 3rd, if you didn't already know, 2025, very recently, James died suddenly and unexpectedly at his home in Nevada. We have no idea what the cause of death was. It was never released. But his final book published...
posthumously.
Thank you. You knew in advance I wasn't going to be able to get that word. That word just doesn't click for me. But anyway, it came out after he died. And it's titled Radical Truth. And it mentions everything from climate change denial lies spread by the government. Oh, two lies spread by the government. So yeah, it seems like he just went down the same pipeline as every other unsuccessful grifter. He just tried to make that right wing push.
Yeah, and he kind of leaned into like the Christian nationalist movement.
Like, oh, yeah, they'll. Yeah.
He's like, they'll pick me up.
Yeah. But perhaps the most important words we could end on coming from Ginny Brown, Kirby's mother, following her daughter's death. Ginny and George founded Seek Safely, which is a nonprofit aimed to guide people like their daughter with information on authors, leaders, and motivational speakers. This is so needed. Just fantastic. Their foundation has a 6-point pledge, one that James never signed because he didn't care. He didn't feel bad. Ginny said, if he doesn't understand that he caused this, he is not a safe person to follow. I do believe that he's sorry that Kirby, James, and Liz are dead. I think he's sorry that this tragedy happened, but he doesn't understand that he needs to apologize that he caused this to happen. And I don't think he'll apologize for that. And she was right. He never did.
Yeah. Curious what happened to him.
I am too.
If it was something health related or...
I don't know. I think it would have been released. I don't know. I shouldn't speculate on what happened to him, but piece of shit. I don't know what else to say.
Well, and Bersaba is now running his whole organization, so.
Perfect.
Yeah, still so. Trying to get people to sign up. Yeah, they had two podcasts, or he had two podcasts. Mm. They were really trying to make it after all of this, which good luck, really.
Yeah.
Because obviously people are very angry with him, and rightfully so. In my mind, I'm like, do I think the guy was inherently evil? I don't necessarily think that he did this with like evil or malicious intentions per se. I think it's the classic example of somebody who ended up with too much power, too much control over people, and started taking advantage of that, and started taking advantage of these people he originally set out to help. Again, he could just be a really good liar and just, you know, put the charm on for you and was really a fake person. But I don't know if I necessarily think he was like, he didn't, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe not evil. No.
I think he should have. I think he
certainly really severely character mistakes. Flawed.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I think he needed the self-help.
Yeah.
You know, he needed to follow his own advice because I think he missed a lot of things.
Just
that he
like,
shouldn't have.
Even if he couldn't admit that it was his fault that they died, he never had any ounce of sympathy for them or really like, oh my God, I'm just, I have, I was horrified in those moments, seeing them like that or knowing that it happened there. Just any type of anything never came out of his mouth other than this ruined my life. In 15 minutes, my life was ruined. I mean, I don't know that to me, he's like a degree of evil for that alone, for not caring
sure.
at all.
I think that's a fair.
Just not showing any empathy for these people who died paying money to be there for you. I don't know. Sick.
It's fair. I think it's a fair assessment. I mean, just because he didn't vocalize that, do we know that he didn't feel that internally or have internal thoughts about that?
You think you would if you were an ounce of smart. If you had those thoughts, you would just
especially
say
as somebody in his profession, you would think that that'd be like the number one thing. And
he's going to still try to be something after this. I don't know. You would think he would fake it to say it at least, but I don't know. I don't know.
But I think part of him thinks that they chose that. He literally was like, oh, they are having too much fun. They chose not to come back.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think there's a degree of evil there because he genuinely believes, like, he doesn't feel bad for them because they chose it. And
Well, his whole teaching is, like, manifestation.
Yeah.
He probably is like, well, they manifested that for themselves.
Yeah, he probably does think that. You're right. That's a good point.
Which is dangerous thinking.
Yeah.
I don't like him. I mean, I it would be a hard jump. I mean, it's not. I think he's evil, frankly, because he took that event and then turned that into part of his narrative. It became the same as receiving the teachings on Mount Sinai to him. Is like, this was an integral part of my life, but look at how I changed and I grew from it. That became his post Sweat Lodge Death's teachings.
Yeah.
And to me, that speaks to the fact that he wanted to twist it to himself. And I don't know. I just think that that's very, very, very bad.
Yeah. To just make money again.
Right.
No. All for what? Mm-hmm. For fame and fortune for yourself again?
Yeah.
How about restitution to your to these families and paying that debt back the best you can? There's no mention of that, so.
No. He doesn't get it. Never did.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel for the families. How angering horrible. And horrible.
And thinking about what their end of life is like. I mean, just.
What a terrible end.
And then everyone who survived but went through serious trauma. And people who weren't even there and just were traumatized by him at some point in his career, you know. A lot of people suffered because of James.
Totally.
So fuck you, James.
There you have it.
And that's all.
That's all she wrote.
That's pregnant talk.
No, it's. I think it's valid. It's valid. But let us know your thoughts on Mr. James Arthur Ray. What do you think of his teachings?
Any fans out there?
Yeah. Or had you ever heard of him before this episode? Let us know. But that's it for us today. We'll see you guys next week in another one. Take care.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.